wondering why Matthew isn't here.
Another coup? Are you serious?
No one's bothered. Has been trying to get us.
Yeah, except I'm successful, you know. I'm joking. There was no coup.
Boys, we have to get up our game here.
Yeah, you've got a non-binary person beating you at everything. Come on. So, welcome tonight. Tonight's debate is this house. Believes technology will destroy the world. It's a 4v4. It's a good night. Oh my god. I'm not sorry. I don't have big enough shoulders for this shit. Oh my god. So, thank you all for coming. It's great to see the room so full tonight. We hopefully have an interesting debate. So much so that we decided to shake up the rules of it. Hence why I'm up here. So. Before we get started, do we have any council announcements?
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead and introduce yourself, please, for new members.
Ryan Hoey, I'm the social officer. So firstly, thank you to everyone who came to the drunk debates on Monday. We raised about £130 for South Belfast Food Bank. I think everyone enjoyed it, so I'll probably organise another one at some point in the future. But the first thing I wanted to, the only thing I want to announce is that our annual formal, the Conversazione, which goes back to the 1800s, is coming up on the 27th of March. So I will be putting out a sign-up form probably by this time next week, once I've sorted out the menu and stuff like that. So it'll be £30 for members, £35 for non-members. And the food looks very nice from just looking at the function menu. But yeah, so save the date in your diary. I'll probably have an announcement next week about more stuff about it. But yeah, that's me.
As has been said before, the 27th of February, we have the end of the school debating competition, which will see schools from right across Northern Ireland come together to debate each other. We need volunteers. I need people to volunteer to judge, volunteer to get students to rooms, help register students, and if you do it, I'll probably buy a pint at some point, but not anytime soon because I'm very, very broke. So please do sign up. I do need all the help we can get because there's only one of me and we have a very small council. So please sign up.
Any other council announcements? Yep.
So basically Warwick University are doing, not an IB, it's more like a public speaking competition. So if you don't like IBs, may as well sign up, contact me about it, external convener, Chelsea. Yeah.
Yeah, the Warwick competition is a really good opportunity. It's 5 minutes, you get to speak about whatever you want. So if you want a platform to talk shit, that's where to do it. Gabble myself now.
You can swear now?
Well, there's no one to stop me, so. Yeah, I did. I kind of like cursed and then realized, and then I was like, wait, who's in the gavel? Oh, wait, it's me. So tonight's gonna be fun. One last council announcement for myself. So I'm Ellie. I am usually the internal convener here, so I usually organize the weekly debates. I harass you all into speaking, hence why these lovely people are sitting in front of me. And so I also usually announce it. Tonight I have successfully taken over, and I am present for the night, but only for tonight. Don't worry, you won't be having to listen to me like this for the rest of the year. You're grand, okay? Over here is Matthew, our usual president, who's just taking a night off because...
You know why.
Yeah, pretty much. So my announcement as internal convener would be that next week is our This House Would Abolish the Monarchy, which is completely full and was full within 15 minutes of the term card being released. It was a spicy one, so thank you so much for harassing me in my DMs for the half an hour after that term card was released. I very much appreciated it and the love that you all have for the term card. So that will be interesting, so that one's full. However, the week after our Valentine's debate, which is This House Regrets the Rise of Dating Apps, still has some space. particularly on Up, because most of you are horny twats and Prop was filled very quickly. So if anyone does regret the rise of dating apps and just thinks that it is a bunch of a cesspit, essentially, please speak to me after at the pub. I won't be at the pub for very long, and you will be able to find my social medias on the Literature page, so please just message me if you want to sign up to speak against dating apps. So, just want to check one more time, no more council announcements? That's us. Alright, perfect. Okay, so now I'm going to bring the secretary up to read the minutes.
Hello everybody. So on the 26th of January 2023, Queen's University Belfast Literary and Scientific Society convened for its 14th ordinary meeting of the 174th session for the motion This House Would Decriminalise All Drugs. Announcements were heard by Dermot Hamill, who presented the NI School's bidding competition on the 27th of February. He asked for volunteers to sign up to help with the event, which he also asked again this week. After a reading of the minutes, the House turned to private members' business. Dermot Hamill presented the QEP love drama, stating that it was a cowardly attempt to undermine the president. Response were heard by Daniel Cormac HLM, Ellie Byrne HLM and James Orchin HLM. A vote of confidence for the president took place. There were 61 votes for, none against, and 2 abstentions, so it was passed by the House. President's questions then took place. Ellie Byrne HLM asked if the president could pick any animal plushie, what would it be? The president responded that he would like a Dermot Hamill plushie. The vote of power opinion then commenced. There were 38 votes for aye, 9 votes for nay, and 11 abstentions. First on the proposition was Noah Barnley. Noah argued that the decriminalisation of drugs would result in more lenient penalties for possession. American laws have historically targeted minority groups, however the users of harder narcotics have been middle class white Americans who have not faced state punishments. This has ultimately been a form of structural racism. He proposed that we should treat drugs without stigma, making provisions for people to get the help they need and deserve. First on the opposition is Cormac McSparran. Cormac stated that the proposition's argument cannot function if that we do not make a distinction as to whether drugs are good or bad. Drugs have been glorified, presenting them as cool or chic, I don't know what you want to call it. However, countless lives have been destroyed as a result of drug usage. He argued that this is not a victimless or guilt-free crime, and that it legitimizes and encourages narco-terrorism. Ultimately, decriminalization will put more money into the hands of those causing this misery. Second on the proposition was Megan Hewitt. Megan stated that even with the decriminalisation of drugs, distribution would still be illegal. She presented the way in which the criminalisation of drugs affected racial minorities, working classes and homeless citizens, targeting people with the intention of filling quotas in the US privatised prisons for profit. With the £1.4 million used for drug control in the UK, Megan proposed that this money could be better used for the development of treatment facilities instead. She concluded by stating, quote, "We know likely the government telling us what to do with our bodies," unquote, and that we should fight for our bodily autonomy. Second on the opposition was Tom Burns. Tom stated that the war on drugs has been lost and the drugs have won. He argued that the war is not only the only option when it comes to criminalisation, and that our current system of fighting drug usage is outdated. Tom proposed a renewal of drug control policy, arguing that the opiate epidemic within legal drugs sold over the counter is far more dangerous. First, we must assure the safe usage of legal drugs before even considering the decriminalisation of illegal ones. Third on the proposition was Jack Hanlon. He argued that the narrative of drugs being an amazing thing is true to an extent, but we must consider the reality of the impact it has on the lives of families and communities. Through decriminalising drugs, we remove the stigma, ensuring the safety of the substances being consumed. Jack presented the decriminalisation policies in the Netherlands, revealing that the greatest crime committed in Holland was tax evasion, not drug dealing. Ultimately, the criminalisation of drug usage has been an example of symbolic violence targeting certain groups and preventing previous vendors from finding new prospects as a result of the charges. Throughout the opposition is Dermot Hamill. Dermot presented the way in which drugs desiccate communities and destroy families. He presented a study which revealed a significant link between mental health conditions and drug usage, citing the impact on the health service as a result. Dermot argued that even with the decriminalisation of drugs, paramilitaries and gangs associated with drug crime will still hold communities hostage. Final speaker on the proposition was Elliot Byrne, HLM. Ellie presented the lack of therapeutic support in prisons for drug users with harsh policies, including isolation in cells. Drug use should be treated as a mental health issue, with decriminalisation being the only option left to provide catered support for users. They presented the way in which safe use houses, effectively testing centres, and more provisions within the health service can aid those with addictions, whilst also targeting the dealers. Ultimately, in our current system, there is a perpetual cycle of struggle and suffering which must be addressed. Final speaker on the op was Ryan Hui, HLM. Ryan proposed that with the right framework, effective therapy could be provided to drug offenders in prison. We need to acknowledge the harms of habitual drug use, with the decriminalisation only solving half the issue. Ultimately, Ryan argued that there are only two credible policies to solve this issue: hardline policies, which deter the use of drugs, or acceptance and focus on harm reduction. Questions were heard by Daniel McCormick, Adam Race and Luke McGuire. The vote on speakerability then took place. There were 41 votes for the props, 16 votes for the op, and one abstention. May I take minutes as read?
Okay, actually, I need the gavel for this. Okay, so now we are moving on to private members' business. So, any... Jesus Christ, your hands are already up. So, any bit of news, any topical discussion, or anything you want to hear other members' thoughts on, this is the time to get the discussion going. So, does anyone have any private members' business? Go ahead.
There's a bill going through the House of Commons at the minute that would allow the public to call a general election. The way it would work would be a petition would be launched, and the way you would get the public to call them would be you need half of the electorate that voted in the last election to get it to pass. I was wondering what the House thought of this.
Go ahead.
I think it's a terrible idea.
Name for the minutes.
Oh, right. Okay. I think it's a terrible idea because the only person who should be allowed to call an election is the monarch.
I'd like to echo the call from Ryan and actually state and go one step further. We should not even have
I'm just concerned with what's already being said. I think everyone, if there are elections, everybody should vote for the government, because there is only the right of passive obedience to our government, and that there is no right of resistance as stipulated by the great philosophers who will not testify.
This is so painful. Anyone else?
You brought this upon yourself.
Yeah, I can't even say anything, you know, to be politically neutral right now. Go ahead.
Daniel McCormick. I'd just like to express my opposition to all of what's been said so far. And in particular, point out how Dermot Hamill is a traitor to not only the rats of Donnybrook Street, but his country and his people. I'm afraid I'm so disappointed.
Point of order. Point of order. Is it in order to specify that the rats of Donnybrook are not his people?
Is it an actual point of order, or is it just a point in general?
It's a point of order. I think it's important to state to the House that the rats of Donnybrook are in fact my people.
Point of order.
Anyway, moving on. Does anyone else have any other piece of private members' business? You've had your chance. Anyone else, please? Anyone else? Oh, come on. There we go, yes.
Hi, Gary.
I'm again.
Sorry, I haven't spoken to you much
just this announced.
I think you're all aware that Shell has made a huge profit this year, but before you guys mention anything about all wages and all that, you have to remember, there's something to start off being never advocate as well. Company usually takes 12 months' time to raise wages for their employees. So before you start making any noise on Twitter, maybe wait 12 months, then start making noise. If you really care about wages and like welfare of the employees, remember that they have record high profit, and don't get mad now, but get mad in 12 months if you really do care about it. Thank you.
Okay, anyone have any opinions on the fact that we should wait 12 months before protesting Shell's not raising wages, is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ryan, go ahead.
I don't think that's necessarily the case, because I know that at my work, as the cost of living has increased, and they've tried to keep wages matching that by increasing salaries. The thing that was announced today about Shell's record profits, which is about 30 billion, I think, which was doubled last year. There's been a bit of misinformation about that, in the sense that that's their global profits. And I think the amount that was actually liable to be paid in the UK was about 2 billion. And due to the excess profits levy that's been introduced, it should be about 75% of that 2 billion will actually go into the exchequer. But I don't really think we're trying to get one, Gary.
I'm sorry.
Any other private members' business on this or on something else? Go ahead.
There's a company.
Name for the minutes, I'm so sorry.
Jacqueline Bonner. There's a company that is looking to invest over $150 million into revising the Dota. And I wanted to know if anyone had any concerns about this, whether it be Jurassic Park esque or we're going to eat them into extinction again.
Any opinions on this? Yes, get your in for the minutes, please.
J-Rap the Vigilant. Firstly, only 150 million to revive species from extinction. That's ambitious. Secondly, absolutely we should, because they were eaten to extinction because they were so delicious we couldn't stop eating them.
Any other on this? Go ahead. Name for the minutes.
Noah Barnley. I've seen too many Jurassic Park films to not have nightmares about the potential for this, so no, that's just not good. That should not.
Go ahead, name for the minutes.
Dermot Hamill. I think that Ulster would say no to reviving.
At the back, name for the minutes, please.
I don't know, it's also a bit of a waste of time, but I've heard the argument for the mammoth being more biodiversity and life back in Siberia. But overall, it's a waste of money and it should be avoided to more pressing concerns.
Okay. The person in the jumper with the white collar.
Dermot. You
Excuse me.
No, you're not. Dermot, you're my protege in terms of the side. You've taken the Ulster says no so far that I have to reject my Padawan now, and just like you could get on with your own business. It's too far for me.
Right of reply.
I have a reply.
Go ahead.
So here's the thing, there is an extinct animal that could be revived. It's called an Ulster Unionist MP.
Right, go ahead. Make it quick.
You may reject me.
Oh. I rebuke you.
But I rebuke you.
Touching.
I'll have you know that if I'm your Padawan, well, I'm a better debater than you. So.
Okay. Anyway, any other pieces of private members' business? Go ahead.
Yes, Terence Bedcalf, I just read from an article in the Times, and related perhaps to your point, the Dodo, I noticed that the Church of Lord Jesus in Squire, West Virginia, has got the last of the serpent dancing pastors there. Is there anyone in this house that would like to take up that job once?
Go ahead.
Where's Rory? Rory, come on, this is right up here.
Okay. Any other pieces of private members' business before we move on? Yeah, go ahead.
Very recently, in the Scottish Parliament, there was a bill passed on the bill on transgender people to switch their gender without a lot of invasive medical practices that are currently being used. And then one of the amendments put on by a Labour MP was that this should be considered more greatly when they're looking at women's private spaces, but the SNP thought this would maybe violate the bill, so they pushed ahead with it anyway. And this then led to Rishi Sunak kind of disregarding the devolutionary competencies, as he said, basically saying because we're not respecting women's spaces, we could disregard the whole bill. So, I mean, I think this kind of drives us more towards a wedge between Westminster and Holyrood, which is something I've always supported. But there are some issues here around whether or not we should be piloting social justice bills so that we can warp ourselves around Westminster, or whether we should push ahead with them, and that then pushes us towards a constitutional crisis. And I just want to know if anyone has any thoughts on this.
Why does this come up on my one night as president? Like, really, they weren't the topics. Oh, anyway, yes, because you haven't spoken yet. Go ahead. Name for the minutes, please.
I think surely there's a bit of a limitation when it comes to trying to push for a convicted sex offender like Isla Bryson to be put into a women's prison. And I think there are limits to what can be allowed under the EU safe guard. Realistically, once that's gone, once you have left the European Union, I'm sure you have to put their foot down and say, if you're going to do this, we will not let you.
Okay, Ryan, go ahead.
I think this is a really difficult piece of conversation. I was actually going to bring up a few weeks ago when it was more like in the news, but then Luke McGuire walked in without his shoes on, I think the better of it. because I feel like this debate is getting so incredibly toxic. You have on one side people basically painting like transgender people in a terrible light and comparing them to like sex offenders and stuff, which I don't think is harm. And then on the other side, you have any group that expresses any concerns about it being labelled as bigots. And I think obviously, I think what you were referencing is probably the thing this week where there was a man who was convicted of two sexual assaults and then changed to identify as a woman and then was put in a female prison and then was taken out after the uproar about it. And I think it's a really difficult one because you're trying to balance making the process easier for those who are trying to change their gender and trying to make that whole process a bit more compassionate and a bit more easy. But at the same time, you also have to consider that sometimes those rights, like in the instance with the prison situation, bump up against other people's rights, and it's about where you get the balance. So I think it's a very difficult conversation. I think it would be better if the team was taken out of it and there was less sort of just labelling the other side as terrible, you know.
Okay. Alright, due to timing, that is us for private member spaces. We now move on, oh god, to President's questions. So this is where you get to ask me any question that doesn't involve me having to state my political stance, because I am currently, for one night only, politically neutral. You may enjoy that while it lasts, and I will come back kicking next week, I swear to God. Okay.
I swear.
Right, cut. Right, I have to. Right, go ahead.
Point of order. Like last time when I was present, we announced 5 minutes on to the president's question. So I'm going to second in that way.
Right, objection. We have 4v4 tonight, so we have to.
It's not like it's
okay, vote to add 5 minutes on.
In favour, raise your hand now.
Aye.
Aye. Can I ask a question? President Byrne, what did you have for breakfast this morning?
I'll kill you.
I didn't get out of bed till 46 past 3, so, I mean, technically I didn't have breakfast. Go ahead.
President Byrne, the Green Party have no MLAs. How are you fighting the gun?
How will I find what?
How are you fighting the gun?
Oh, it's so cheeky. Well, the gown personally keeps falling off my bloody shoulders, and I don't exactly have like the smallest shoulders, and I'm wearing Josh's suit, which has like, you know, like structured shoulders. So it feels like quite flowy, which is nice, but it like keeps falling off, and I just feel like an idiot in it. So yeah. Go ahead.
Since you've got the game, you feel yourself perhaps feeling a more sort of more at ease, perhaps more loving. You would say that, you know, you were a piece of love, and in fact, do you find yourself ever so slightly more attracted to the doctrine of Hare Krishna? Because that's what I find whenever I.
I mean, that must be a phenomenon with you personally, because no. Next! Go ahead.
What do you think of Elon Musk personally?
What do I think of Elon Musk personally?
Is there a neutral thing?
Technically, there's no way I can answer that and be politically neutral, but let's just say on a personality basis and ignoring, you know, everything, no.
No?
No. Go ahead.
How many MLAs have the Green Party got?
Why you're asking me these political questions, considering I am completely politically neutral?
I'm not asking you. I'm not asking you. I'm not asking you. And then, as a resident of South Belfast, if you could help me find my local Green Party MLA. So this is a question of mathematics, not of politics, and that is why I am asking how many MLAs have the Green Party.
Technically, none, however, at the moment, considering that the executive isn't up and running, no one has an MLA at the moment that is functioning. Next! It's not.
Next.
No, it's as far as I'm going to go with that, because I have to be politically neutral right now, so.
Well, just say it's
cool. Next, go ahead.
Could we find out that Lafty has the breakfast?
A chocolate bar, next.
Since we don't have any of the moment, in fair enough, how many MLAs did the Green Party?
MLAs, however, responsible for over one-fifth of the legislation passed. Next!
That sounded pretty political.
Point of order, no, it's a mathematical fact based on statistics and therefore not a political stance. Go ahead.
This is not political at all, so I promise.
It's talked
four
months
in
our
anthem. Many
this is political! Oh, that guy's
in.
Considering that I am broke and on a leave of absence from university, I will be attending Conversazioni, and I'll be repping a gorgeous suit or gown. You will have to wait and see. I might dander across to Queen's Radio formal. I might dip my foot in, you know, the Pride sock. I might just dip my foot in the Femme sock formal. Who knows? Anyway, next question. Anyone else but these two, please?
I have one more, just one.
I have one.
Go ahead.
Is this painful?
Yes.
I know how I feel.
Go ahead.
Just so we can get some of the time out of the way, I'll stall a bit for you here, just so we can fill the time and everything's better. But in your professional opinion as the president of Literata, what is the best film that's going to come out this year, and why is it going to bore you with it?
It's actually Sherlock Dermot, I think.
I couldn't even name you a movie that is coming out this year at all. I only go to movies when I get dragged by Josh to the cinema, so I've no clue. We have time, let me see. We have time for two more questions, which I'm going to regret, but oh well. One night only. Go ahead.
After the assembly election we're going to have this year, how many MLAs have you been voting for?
Not about Green Party MLAs.
Next question. Go ahead.
What's Josh's favourite film to connect
with? I don't know. Yeah, he doesn't even know. It's okay, sweet.
Barbie 2. Oh,
yeah. Any other questions before we wrap up? I'm so close, go ahead.
This is a genuine question. Brendan Burns, what's the brand of the jacket you're wearing right now? It looks really nice.
What's the what?
What's the brand of the Josh jacket you're wearing right now?
First off, it's Burn, not Burns. It's a completely different last name. Because that's the no, Burns is the policy. Burns is the anglicized version of my last name. So,
Well, the Simpsons character
doesn't matter. Mr. Burns.
It's from Next. It's from Next. There we go. You bought it like 4 years ago, and I have stole it for tonight. Okay, no, I said that's the end. That was the last question. Get your hand down. Okay, so now we move on to the vote of prior opinion. Now, this is not about who is speaking tonight. This is not about who you slept with, who you haven't slept with on Proper Off. Isn't about their hair, what you they're wearing. This is about your genuine opinion on the topic of the debate before hearing the debates. So, if you think technology will destroy the world, vote for proposition. If you think that technology won't destroy the world, you'll be voting for opposition, okay? So, to vote for proposition, raise your hand. Okay, to vote for the opposition, the technology will not destroy the world, raise your hand. Okay, to vote, to abstain. If we have any Alliance voters in the House tonight, if you'd like to sit on the fence, raise your hand now to vote for neither. If you're abstaining.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Rory! Rory! Can we have the results? Shush.
34 votes for I, 29 votes for A, 9 abstentions, proposition held.
Well done. Okay, so. Oh my god, he actually, like, sorry, I've got Matthew's, like, script, and he actually has it written down for, thank god that's over, as soon as pressing question. He's actually written it down. Like, I've just turned the page after pressing the question. Thank god that's over, !! There's two. Okay. So, I will now explain the rules. Okay, so. Anyway, it's almost time to kick off tonight's debate. Before I introduce our first speaker, I'll quickly go through the rules for any of our newer members tonight. Each speech is 7 minutes long, with the first minute being protected time. That means you cannot ask a question. Do not raise your hand. Do not shout. Okay, until you hear the bell. Jamie, can we have the bell, please? That means that the first minute is up and you can now ask questions. There will be 5 minutes of unprotected time while the speaker is speaking that you can annoy the ever-living life out of them. And then you will hear the minute again at 6 minutes in. Bell, please. That means it is now back to protected time. Shut up, get your hands on and listen to the speaker's last minute of their speech. Once the speech is finished in the 7 minutes, we will then ring the bell again for a third time. Then, after 30 seconds, if you're still speaking, which shouldn't happen because Kira isn't speaking tonight, you will then hear the bell every 10 seconds,
Kira
like so.
Is gone.
Jimmy.
And that means shut up, sit down. Okay, so then we will introduce the next speaker and so on, so forth, back and forth, whenever you ask a POI. How you ask a POI, okay. So, speaker speaking, you want to ask a POI, you raise your hand and you say point of information, okay? Point of information. You then have 30 seconds maximum, and I mean 30 maximum. It's technically 10. After 30, you will not be able to hear you speaking because this will be repeatedly hitting the table, okay? To ask your point, it must be a point on the speech and it must be quick. It's not your time to shine, it's theirs, okay? Then they will either respond or not respond. The other thing is, whenever you put up your hand and say point of information, the speaker has to accept it. You can't just say point of information and then start talking, okay? The speaker will either say yes, no, or whatever, okay? Point of orders, which are never, ever used right in here, okay? So a point of order is basically if something needs factually corrected, if someone has made a remark that they definitely shouldn't have, whether that be discriminatory or anything, and that will then be brought under consideration and dealt with at that time. Okay, so if you feel that whenever you've asked a point of information, or if you're on the other side and you feel that the other person is purposely misrepresenting your point, i.e. saying something like, oh, such and such said, and you did not say that, you can raise your hand and say, point of clarification. So if you've been misquoted, you can use this. Roisin isn't here, but Roisin uses these brilliantly. So if you believe the rules have been broken, or you need to ask me something during debate, such as if a window can be open, or if you feel a member is being abusive or acting outside the points of clarification in order to make a generic point, I will be very sad and force you to buy me a pint at the pub as a suitable fine. I don't drink, so you can buy me a Pepsi. Okay, and with the rules outlined, it is now my privilege to welcome the first speaker, opening the argument for tonight's proposition in debate, Gypsy.
Presentation tonight. Thank you. Good evening, everyone. I have hung up my secretary gown to debate a motion I feel very passionately about. I will be arguing that AI technology poses a threat to the last morsel of humanity we possess, love. Yes, this opposition may present you with a wide variety of wonderful technological advances we have made, be it in medicine, engineering, or education. However, I will be posing a magnifying glass over the serious issue of AI when it interferes with human emotions. My team tonight will also be covering the various other detrimental aspects of human reliance on technology and how this will ultimately destroy the world we know. Over the past few months, I have been bombarded by adverts promoting these online dating apps in which you can form a romantic relationship with an AI. Now, either my algorithm is completely fucked, or my phone is sensing that I'm in need of replacing my own real-life relationships with a fake woman called Julie. As much as I'm sure Julie is a lovely woman, I'm not quite sure I'm completely ready to lose touch with reality. Through apps such as Smart Virtual Girlfriend, My Lover, and Replica Virtual AI Friend, one can form a relationship with a bot. These adverts claim to provide you with the perfect partner who has no flaws, no hair from the neck down, a virtual yes man who is ready and waiting in your pocket to agree with every opinion you have.
On that point?
No, thank you. This partner is hot. They are always happy. They never have a bad day. They always want to please you. You are their world. Their only purpose is to serve you. As a human being, who can claim to possess these characteristics? We are a flawed group who may have shitty days, who can have outbursts of frustration, who may forget to shave their pits on the odd day. But that's what makes us ultimately human. Nobody is perfect. Julie can go suck it for all I care. Out of pure curiosity, and definitely not because I was considering downloading it, I came across a site detailing the features of the app. One description stood out to me as highly disturbing. On the app, My Virtual Girlfriend at Home, The AI partner is described as so. She is currently living in an apartment, and you can see her moving around freely. Take care of your partner by doing things like eating and exercising. This app has a microphone, so you may talk to your girlfriend. Prepare to be surprised when she responds to your voice. Your partner understands simple language and can carry out simple activities. Remember to take care of her fundamental needs so she can keep fit. What in the 1950s housewife is this? No, thank you. The notion of having to look after your housebound, thick as two planks girlfriend perpetuates negative gender role stereotypes and puts the movement back women have made over the last 100 years back 5 paces. What does this teach the next generation about our place in society? Heads, shoulders, knees, and toes. An AI partner has none of these things. The feeling of holding your partner's hand, going for long walks along the beach, bonding over shared interests or world views, holding your phone and staring into a screen, walking along a street, never looking up to see what or who is in front of you, will ultimately never provide the same emotional resonance. Go ahead.
Would you ban long-distance relationships then?
That's still in communication with a human being through technology. I'm saying that forming a relationship with an AI who is not a real person is the problem here. I would like to turn to the next slide. I tried to generate my own AI boyfriend with a characteristic I like in a partner. My favorite hair color, personality traits. My favorite hair color, personality traits, but most importantly of them all, a love of cats. After inputting my preferences, the AI app generated my dream boyfriend. Please? Dermot Hamill.
Spelling mistake, it says loves cats. I think you misspelled rats.
I will happily take whatever pets Dermot decides for us to have. I will be happy with that.
On that point?
No, thank you.
Okay.
As much as it's been fun playing around with AI apps, there are serious ethical considerations which must be addressed. According to philosopher Cindy Friedman, through the robotic movement in which people actively replace human contact with that of AI and robots, people are socially isolated, given that technology only offers an illusion of companionship. Hence, we are alone together. It has been argued that this could reduce the willingness of people to go out into the world and express their moral agency. This is because people may be more comfortable within the confines of their robotic relationships, because the technology bestows upon them pleasurable benefits that they would otherwise not have to exercise their moral agency to receive, i.e. interact with other people. Sex robots, and yes, I did just say sex robots, have been found to reduce a person's desire to pursue a human partner, as they have all the satisfaction they need without the trouble of making small talk. Through anthropomorphizing these AI partners, we are potentially investing emotional energy into an app. As a species, we are hardwired to bond with each other. That suggests that the capacity for love evolved, the natural selection favoring caring for one another. Fossils tell us that love evolved hundreds of millions of years ago, helping us our mammalian ancestors survive in the time of the dinosaurs. If love is the last non-artificial entity we possess as a species, what hope do we have for the future? Technology has weaved its way into every crevice of our modern existence. We see it in our hospitals, our transport, our work. Can it not leave this single speck of humanity left for us to truly enjoy unfiltered? To conclude my argument in the style of live, laugh, love, I have found a quote which perfectly summarizes this debate. Gerard Way once said, being happy doesn't mean that everything is perfect. It means that you have decided to look beyond the imperfection. Through constantly striving for perfection through technology, be it in relationships, love, or romantic bonds, we are endangering the element of what makes us human. Thank you for listening, and please support the proposition today.
about one. So ultimately, whenever I approach this topic, I find it to be a very flawed question, as whenever we perceive the world, many of us perceive it in a very different way. So rather than talking about how, what's called, that, well, how technology is actually going to affect us or alter the course of our planet, as in, will it actually end the world, as in all life and all inhabitants upon it, I am not going to argue this point, as through the course of our existence, this is an ever-changing phenomenon. And over the course of the next few centuries, it will most likely continue to change. So I'm going to argue, is technology going to end our world? Well, will technology run the risk of ending our world, as in destroying us, the people and inhabitants of each and every country on the world? So there is many threats that technology could pose to us. These come in many shapes and forms. However, ultimately, the question of will they destroy us is frivolous. Even whenever I asked one of the best AIs available right now, ChatGPT, the AI stated that technology lacked the agency or intent to actually come up with this matter. In other words, it's our choice. No, thank you. So what if AI developed such agency or motive? Like what the question might have been there. Is it possible that an advanced AI like Skynet could replace us and suck all of the resources from our planet? The answer is quite simply no. The lovely robot Megan is not going to come bursting through your door anytime soon. So, computer systems can only ever match the intelligence of the people who actually created them. So, they certainly cannot ever replace the diversity and innovation of the human mind, nor the minds of any other creature on our planet.
On that point.
Go ahead.
Can computers not develop computers smart from themselves and can they continue and become better and better and better and better?
No. It comes down to the base, what's it called? It comes down to the actual base framework of the computers. They operate in a binary system, whereas the human brain operates in a system between negative 70 and positive 80 millivolts. So the brain there is drastically different. So if anything, the risk we really run with technology is becoming absolutely dependent on them, in which we very much are today. And if anything, the absolute disappearance of technology poses a greater risk to us than anything else. Could you imagine if every single computer system right now disappeared? And what's called hospitals would collapse, government systems would collapse, banking would collapse. It would be mass genocide on a global scale. So if anything, we should be working to preserve technology in all cases, and we are far more likely to develop a symbiotic relationship with it in the future. So now down with that rabbit hole out of the way, there's a few other points I would like to move on to. What if we accidentally ended the world via any other technological means? So for example, climate change, or an ecological disaster, or even a pandemic. Well, we did pretty well in the last three, and our technology actually got better as a result. So chances of that is pretty low. And what's called, as a result, each and every time we've faced a global problem caused by technology, we've actually came out better in some way, shape, or form. And what's called, we've even ended up coming up with new and better ideas.
On that point.
Go ahead.
Have we become a better society with polar bears dying, ecosystems being destroyed on our glaciers?
That is a good question. What's called, we have only spread up what's called the melting of the ice caps. It is predicted that they would melt either way. So whether or not the polar bears went extinct, we've just changed the timeline. And if anything, what's called, we are getting better, well, just as good at managing ecological problems on a small, well, we've actually become masters of managing ecological problems on a small scale. So how long before we actually would be able to manage them on a large scale? So that kind of covered my point on ecological efforts. So what about climate change? Well, we sped it up. We've changed the world in the past 150 years, equivalent to 10 or 20,000 years. So if we've already managed to do that in such a short time, how long would it really take us to develop the technology to actually alter that course? As for deliberate means of ending the world, well, this would really come down to human choice. And like I said in the start of the speech, or sorry, ChatGPT said in the start of the speech, that is a case of us actually deciding to, which is an agency technology does not possess. Thank you.
Welcome second on the opposition.
discuss the impact that technology has on our daily lives, I think we can justify being scared. With all the different movies and TV shows we've seen about the dangers of technology, from Black Mirror to WALL-E, the rise in these powerful technologies does scare us, but what are we scared of? Are we afraid of the actual development of processors and circuit boards? No. We're afraid of the intention behind the productions of these technologies. We're afraid of being exploited, becoming addicted, and losing autonomy. I argue that technology will not destroy the world. Capitalism will. Technology is not an objective and neutral entity within modern life. We cannot separate the technology from the humanity in its creation. It is a tool created by ordinary human beings that each hold biases that can translate through this technology. It is not infallible, and it is not beyond our control. It's common to think of technology as entirely separate from ourselves and otherworldly, but it is deeply human. We create it, we make the decisions surrounding it, and we can make the decision to be smarter in how we interact with it. Under capitalism, we're always looking for more growth and infinite expansion. This continual growth will leave us never satisfied and grow the already strife, individualistic culture that's prominent today. This shows how technology, being a human tool that is reflective of the culture and ideals of the time, is being used as a tool to reinforce the dominant ideology of the ever-expansive and exploitative nature of capitalism. In a time in which there is a finite number of resources that can be exploited within this system of infinite expansion, the next resource that can be exploited for economic gain is your very attention. When you're addicted to the constant stream of media and content and providing money to this system through ad revenue, do we blame the phones that we are using to do this, or do we blame the proven intent of psychological harm in favour of corporate profit and the lack of protections and regulations enforced on this by both the government and the private media corporations? The film The Social Dilemma shows the different techniques in which media corporations use technology to manipulate their users through engaging them on various echo chambers and pipelines, all to encourage the active use and interaction on their platforms. Again, do we blame this on the technology or the harmful intent posed by the dominant ideology of exploiting users for profit?
On that point?
Yeah.
Would you agree that this argument mirrors the same argument we use around gun policy, that guns don't kill people kill people?
Right, but guns don't also provide healthcare and education and renewable resources. Like, there's no good side to having guns, but there's a lot of benefits to having technology if we are smart about it. The corporate greed that influences the exploitative ways in which we interact with technology may be on track to do irreparable damage, but I believe that we have more control and power in this situation than we think. We are not afraid of the progression of technology within the medical and healthcare fields, and we are not afraid of the progression of technology in terms of renewable energy. This is because when we observe technology as a powerful tool that can aid humanity for the better, we understand their beneficial use. We don't believe this technology is acting morally, but that the human intent behind the technology is moral. But we are afraid of the technological advancement in terms of observation, surveillance, and excessive entertainment because we know these do not aid humanity for the better. The fact that we do hold fear and apprehension surrounding these technologies prove that we do have autonomy in declining the emergence of these. As consumers, we do hold power to decline the use of technologies that we simply do not like. Take, for example, Zuckerberg's metaverse. Everyone was so afraid that this new technology would alter life as we know it, and that our lives would be lived in online space as opposed to the real world. But that didn't happen because we didn't want it to, and because we don't want to live like that. We have got control, and humans can and do think rationally about the emergence of this new technology. Even the Google video recording glasses failed because people didn't like the concept. I argue that we should implore more faith in the intelligence of humanity and faith in the want to create a better future for ourselves.
On that point.
Sure.
You've talked about how the big issue is capitalism, yep, not technology, and yet you that through capitalism we can reject technology that we don't like.
Believe it or not, you can critique a system while participating in it.
I love that. please, capitalism, not critique it.
If someone forces you to buy someone, you're not gonna just do it because they tell you to, because you're living in a capitalistic society. You can just decide not to buy something, like. Right, I argue that technology itself is not the threat. Technology does not act maliciously out of its own will or autonomy. Technology is a tool, and the morality of this tool lies entirely in the hands of those who have control of it. Technology will not destroy the world. Corporate greed, late-stage capitalism, and authoritarianism with the utilisation of these technologies might. But I choose optimism. I choose to believe that we can rationally object to the harm that the misuse of these technologies pose, can fight for a better future, and not idly accept the ideology posed by harmful institutions that do not serve your interests. And I implore all of you to do the same and vote for the opposition.
Is it any wonder people are so afraid? Constantly harassed and bombarded by Big Brother's ever watchful eye. Will you accept my cookies? Please, proceed, you must accept my cookies. But what if I don't want to, Big Brother? Of course, I'm referencing 1984 surveillance state when I say Big Brother and not a perverted. However, the point still stands. As my other peers have made, I would like to continue and expand on the fact that technology will destroy the world, but is actively destroying it. I would like to start with one of the most overlooked but destructive negatives of technology, which is e-waste. The environmental impact of the production of disposable technology can have significant environmental impacts, including the depletion of natural resources and the release of harmful pollutants into the environment. E-waste is one of the world's biggest problems, which is only growing, but it's not something new. Today, me and my housemate bought a used car and we're discussing, on the way back, the parts that were readily available to repair. A new tyre, a replacement front console, a glove box hatch. This is not available in the technology space. The biggest technology company in the world, Apple, actively discourages its customers from repairing, inventing new screws, having stores pay for licences in order to repair their own products that customers own. Is not only destroying our planet, but also, technology is not only destroying our planet, but also raising serious human rights violations. In order to develop this technology, if all of us have one of these in our pocket, a large amount of it is made of copper. The Democratic Republic of Congo, which accounts for 10% of the world's supply of copper, has faced numerous UN human rights violations, including forced labor, slavery, child labor, and irreversible environmental degradation from the mining methods used.
On that point?
Yep.
The Democratic Republic of Congo is not a technology.
I'm getting to the point of like why it's relevant there. Yeah. If overlooking human rights violations to allocate the resources to the latest gadget isn't destroying the world, I don't know what is. In recent years, efforts have been made to improve the ethical conditions. However, footage has still been found of the slavery and abuses going on.
On that point?
Yep.
It's ethically sourced technology. If you can do it ethically, you do it ethically. Is that technology destroying the world as well?
Sorry, repeat that.
Is ethically sourced technology destroying the world also, or is it just non-ethically?
My point, moving on to this, is the fact that how the technology is sourced, what I was saying is the e-waste being thrown away, there's no right to repair. So the fact that we're just getting more and more when it's already readily available, if it's readily available, the human rights violations have already happened, supposedly just breaking that down and re-entering it into the environment and into the supply chain is less of an ethical issue than having slaves mine it again. Yep.
Could you argue that that's also just the companies that own the technology are, like, instead of them recycling that, it's the people behind the technology that are so, like, destroying the world and, like, causing slavery?
the consumer rather than the company.
The companies that own.
Yeah, that's exactly my point. I was sort of saying Apple is sort of big tech. Yep. Moving on to my second point, we've just been through a pandemic, and still in large parts of the world there is a pandemic. Usually this would lead to a war. However, this doesn't happen anymore because of Silicon Wars. The biggest thing now is cybersecurity, and the two superpowers in the world, China and America, both fight over who has the fastest chip, who can trade first, and who has the best weapons to autonomously engage with each other. If this isn't a threat of the big Skynet the opposition talked about, I don't know what is. To wrap up my speech, I asked the AI, ChatGPT, which was also brought up in this debate, to conclude. What I actually found was that AI refused, and I quote, "I'm sorry, but it is not scientifically accurate or ethical to state that technology will definitely destroy the world. Additionally, making such a definitive statement without sufficient evidence can cause unnecessary fear and panic." I don't know about you, but I'm panicking. "A refusal to provide what is asked and raising a metaphorical eyebrow to the command of a human certainly alarms me to a sinister future." So I'll end with this. If a computer is capable of a choice, now so am I. And to the next time I'm offered cookies, I say no. Thank you.
Members of the House, the Council, the confusing cult that is the Literific. I am here to dissuade you from believing technology will destroy the world. Already we've heard a lot about the goodness, the badness, the ugliness of technology. We've discussed examples of abuse, overuse, and obtuse tech giants. I don't really think that's the point of this debate. Instead, I will discuss the nature of apocalypticism in politics and daily life, and argue that a belief that technology, or anything really, will destroy the world is not only dangerous, but a waste of time. And before I begin, I want to mention a couple of things. I think our perception of technology has thus far been very limited to just new technology, so social media, tech giants. No one has addressed what technology really is and why we have it. Some 2.6 million years ago, the first hammer stone was made as a spearhead, then some 1.5 million years later, the same stone tool was used to tear meat to cook on a fire, by which point our Homo erectus ancestors had adapted full mobility in their thumb to do exactly that. Grip the tool, cut the meat, ignite the flame. The point I'm trying to make here is that neither the thumb nor the tool came first. There was a technological coevolution between both. Our hands created the technology that, in turn, created us back. Trying to separate technology as something agent and responsible is failing to address the cultural coevolution of our bodies. Now, I want to discuss the cultural critique of Mark Fisher and the communicative parasite he coined in Capitalist Realism. I'm a big fan of Fisher, and for those who haven't heard of him, he was a music critic, political theorist, and lecturer at Goldsmiths University. I say was, because he tragically took his own life in 2017. His main spiel is the idea that pervasive networking in a late capitalist society is erasing the line between leisure and work. Scrolling is not work per se, it's not productive, compulsory, paid, but we're obliged to check, flick, and post like we're on a timer, like we owe the algorithm our time. It's in this light that one is sentenced to believe that, in the words of my hero, my idol, my queen, Margaret Thatcher, there is no alternative. Now, there's a lot of truth in what Fisher writes about, a lot of truth in this collective resignation to technology, inevitability of material consumption. But where I find capitalist realism limited is in its failure to articulate how to get out. We're exploited through our phones, yes, we're surveyed daily, yes, we're subject to the most invisible yet brutal age of capitalism anyone could have possibly imagined, but where next? Eco-anxiety is a poignant example of this. So eco-anxiety is beyond a fear of climate change. It's an all-encompassing hopelessness young people feel towards the planet heating up. It's a belief that an individual, as an individual, there is no tangible way of changing anything. And though it's not recognized as an official mental health condition, those who suffer from eco-anxiety suffer from symptoms of depression, panic, and dissociation. And it's totally self-perpetuated too, because the very lack of being able to do anything that is so wrapped up in depression is the real fear of the eco-anxious. Dr. Bridget Bradley, a social anthropologist at St. Andrews University, outlines this difference between a fear of climate change and a chronic submission to it in her paper, Eco-Warrior with an O versus Eco-Warrior with an A. And her argument is that the eco-warrior is unable to engage in climate activism compared to the eco-warrior who is proactive and eager to. And the difference between them? A belief in change. I guess the limitations of using an individual in the context of this argument is generalizing their psyche, and I acknowledge that it's not as easy to be or not to be depressed. Don't get me wrong. I fear technology as much as the next person does. I fear its effect on my mental health. I fear its pervasiveness in politics. I fear its abuse on an international level. I fear the omnipotence of HAL 9000 and the mechanized militia of the Daleks. I can feel anxious, but it's only until I believe my fear has control over me, has the capacity to destroy me, do I have a panic attack. And a panic attack is a microcosm of apocalyptic politics. By the time I'm having a panic attack, I'm fully convinced I'm about to die from a stroke. And it doesn't really matter if it's true or not, because by that point, I've manifested the symptoms of a stroke and called the bloody ambulance. So even if technology will destroy the world, why should any of us choose to believe it? For believing it is beyond fearing it. It's submitting to it. Believing it is accepting defeat. An emotional reaction to defeat is not riots, it's not anarchy. The reaction to defeat is submission. Yes. Mark Fisher suffered from severe depression, but as he alludes to in Ghosts of My Life, a big part of his suffering was a submission to an inevitability of the end of the world. If you don't want technology to destroy your world, you have to believe there is a chance that it will not, that there is enough room between the cracks to push the system apart. Do you guys really think the staff would be striking if they believed the university was invincible? Believing technology will destroy the world has never stopped anyone from abusing it. Just as believing the world will combust and burn and explode and fucking die has never stopped any leftish neoliberal politician investing in oil. There is actually no positive aspect of believing technology will end the world, so I advise everyone to avoid it at all costs. Thank you.
First of all, we've had four maiden speakers tonight, so I think they deserve another round of applause. They've been absolutely brilliant tonight, and I thought I couldn't debate against a group of maidens without putting on a suit. So, technology. Technology bad. Technology bad. I have three pieces of technology to discuss tonight. Vapes, vibrators, and rat traps. Vapes. Vapes are bad, as every parent will tell you. And as you should sometimes listen to your parents. These are marketed to our young people. They destroy our lungs, and they taste really nice. They're really bad. Our president would agree. These are really bad, and that is why technology will destroy the world. For we're all going to die of popcorn lung, depression, nicotine addiction, and sadness. That is what technology offers you. It offers you the vape. And I say no to the vape. When it comes to the vape, Ulster will fight. Ulster will be right. Now there was a lot of Told you I'd give you his Carson. We've discussed ecological disasters tonight, ignoring the fact that it's us and technology that's causing them. We've discussed the fact that capitalism is bad, but also that capitalism is kinda good, and capitalism is capitalism, I think. I'm not really sure. It's capitalism, it's great. Vibrators.
On that point.
Yes.
Where are you keeping your example of a vibrator?
I'm afraid, for the sake of our young maiden speakers, I don't think it would be appropriate to take one on stage. And I also think that if James Orchard were in the room, he would find it deeply offensive. So I won't do that tonight. It is scientifically proven that following the invention of vibrators, that birth rates went down. And if anything is going to destroy our planet, it's a drop in our birth rates.
What, insurance?
No, specifically through vibrators. Vibrators, we can't compete, lads. Like, mine doesn't vibrate. Like, you could get ones that are like 12 inches long, and listen, I might have a good personality, it's not that good. And, yeah, we can't compete. Yes, we cannot do it. We cannot compete.
On that point?
Of course.
Not my attitude.
Well, you know what, I like the cut of your jib. Rat traps. I spent quite a lot of time this morning searching local shops trying to find rat traps. I could not buy them because, just like me, South Belfast says no to rat traps. Ulster says no to rat traps. And what the prop is, what the opposition offer you are rat traps. They offer you vibrators and they offer you vapes. And rat traps seek to destroy our rodent population. I don't know how, but okay.
I have been informed by a juror, a very high source, that the first vibrator was Cleopatra with her tube of, quote, angry bees. Just goes up.
I put on suit for this. Ulster says no.
On that point. I just want to jump in and to continue. I'm sure that it's on the tip of your tongue that that's precisely why Roman fell.
Exactly. What we all know is that Caesar was stabbed with a vibrator by Brutus. No, that's a sound. What they have offered you are vapes, vibrators, and rat traps. And you know what? No. I not only reject such articles of filth, of destruction, of presidentialness, and of the destruction of our rat communities, for whom contribute much more to Belfast than anyone in North Belfast. So I say to the opposition tonight, because I know you're all waiting for it, I rebuke you, and most of fucking all, I rebuke you. Ireland north, south, east and west has suffered nothing as much as the broken pledges of British statesmen. And while the opposition may not be British statesmen, what they offer you is filth and broken pledges. They offer you nothing of substance. They seek to destroy your world. And I will not accept it, my friends. And you ought not to accept it. Never, never, never. This house believes that technology will destroy the world in the same way that the technology that is that bell has destroyed my eardrums. I reject you. I rebuke you. I say propose.
Frenner doesn't seem Dermot speak before, he does that same speech every time. The bees would just kind of throw him off of it, and I think it worked out well. President Byrne, members of the proposition, members of the House, we do offer you vapes. We offer you vibrators. We do, especially with force and with feeling, offer rat traps, and we always will. And anyone who's got a problem with these things can leave via that door right now. Now, I've always been a strong proponent for technology. I've always believed that technology is a force for good. Ever since I was put on this motion with about 2 minutes before we actually started, I have always said, and will always say, that technology is not our enemy, but our saviour. Now, the first proposition's unforgettable speech about sex robots and an AI Dermot Hamill is perhaps one of the most apt and fitting speeches I've ever seen for this great, hallowed and really weird society. I don't want to speak for anyone specifically here, but there's a very high chance, especially with numbers like this, despite the reputation of debating societies across this country of a room full of, you know, smooth-talking shaggers with really rippling muscles and horse appendages, whatever else, at least someone here wants or perhaps needs an AI boyfriend or girlfriend or partner, and perhaps needs a sex robot, and
One, why not? Would you buy me one? And two, do you need the sex robot?
We can split mine if you want it. And following on from that, on the very strong Irish unionist Carsonite guff previously about vapes, I'm pretty sure with the number of vapes that are sold in Ulster, and probably the number of vapes that are in this room, and the actual abilities that they do have in stopping people from smoking, which is incredibly harmful, Ulster is very much saying yes to vapes, and we are very much saying yes to vapes. We also say yes, as I said, to vibrators, and also especially to rat traps. They might be coughing whenever they say yes to these things. They may not be able to be very coherent when they say it because of the coughing, but they're very much saying yes all the same. Progression of technology is unstoppable. Its onward march is constant. The continual evolution of technology is a fact. The very notion of this motion that technology is in and of itself bad and destructive is absurd. Technology is vast, it's expansive, it's messy, yes, but fundamentally it's brilliant. Historic and current overindulgence on resources and finite facilities has led to where we are today, and I concede.
On that point.
Sure.
Can you please describe in great detail, as much as you care to, the societal impact, positive societal impact of vibrators, and how they've got us to where we are today?
Honest answer? No, I don't think I can. Perhaps in the pub after? Maybe. But we'll leave it with me, I'll see what I get for you. where we are, I've written here just the line, we are a wee bit fucked, and I meant that in sort of large scale societal point, but just generally in terms of where we are in this room, I agree, we are a wee bit fucked. We need to trust technology to get us out of the mess that we are in. Think about it, without modern dynamic forces of technology to take us out of the hole that we are in, that we ourselves have put us in, we remain in the hole. On a very basic point, the shovel is a technology. We'd be in a literal hole if it wasn't for the shovel. We are in a hole now. We need modern technology to get us out of the hole we're in. Renewable energies, revolutionary science, life-changing research. That's what we need. Without technology, we remain, as I said and won't say again, just a wee bit screwed. Even if you distrust technology, you have to admit it's our only way out. Technology is not a noun. Technology is a verb. It is a process of ideas, creation, recreation, hypotheses and theorems, recreation, more recreation, and recreation again. It is not a product, but a production. Technology is everything from the pencil to the Large Hadron Collider. Even more so, it is everything from the creation of the pencil to the creation of the Large Hadron Collider. Sure.
Is technology recreation?
Technology is a process. If... What?
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry, Ellie, it's not okay. In one of my very recent debates, speaking on the Enlightenment before Christmas, I, as a politics student, cited The West Wing, which is the greatest piece of modern political writing, with the notable exception, and he's not here to take credit, of James Orchard's script to Sherlock Hamill and the Rats of Donnybrook. At that time, I applied the quote to the Enlightenment, and now with an incredible level of debating deafness that you will never see again, I'm going to apply it to this motion. The quote is, "We came out of the cave, we looked over the hill, and we saw fire. And we crossed the ocean, and we pioneered the west, and we took it to the sky. The history of man is hung on a timeline of exploration, and this is what's next." This is how technology will save us. The timeline of exploration is our timeline of evolution, our timeline of discovery, our timeline of technology. It'll require trust, it'll require a lot of work, but it's our only hope for our future. Technology isn't destroying our world, we are. Our actions, our economic system, our greed has done immeasurable damage to our world. Technology is in itself passive. ChatGPT is passive. It'll learn from us. In the words of the proposition themselves, it merely references us. Cheating on an essay isn't going to destroy the world. Speaking Danish isn't going to destroy the world. We, however, are actively damaging our world. To once again, and I can't believe it's happened twice now and it doesn't come from Dermot, to quote our hero, our idol, our queen, Margaret Thatcher, there is no alternative. Technology is our only out. We have destroyed our world. We have damaged our world. It is our actions and our uses of what we have that has destroyed the world. Technology in itself has not destroyed the world. We need technology to get us out of the mess that we ourselves have put ourselves in. Without it, we are stuck in the exact same place we are. We cannot move forward. This world will end because of our actions, and it will end unless we use technology properly to fix it. Thank you.
Thank you for an amazing speech. Now, we move on. So many notes, like this is a whole folder. I'm dyslexic and this is not. It's a whole wall of text. Give me. Where the fuck am I? Okay, so now we are on to questions from the floor. So first I will ask for anyone for a question for proposition. Now this is for them to answer and then the others get to reply. So does anyone have a question for proposition? Go ahead.
We've all talked at length about how technology will destroy the world, but what do you think of the possibility of it saving the world? As an example from recent history, the DART program, which has heavy involvement in Queen's, actually, Dr. Albert Simmons from physics helped a lot with it, recently basically fired a rocket at very large speeds into an asteroid to redirect it. More of a proof of concept than anything else, but it could be vital in protecting our planet from future dangerous asteroids. Thoughts?
That's the DART asteroid. That one that I had towards Earth, so that was just a perfect concept. It was very effective at the test, but asteroid collisions aren't that common, and the last time we had one, the timescale that we had over was definitely the timescale we're working on this debate. Most of the existential risks we're facing are climate change within like the next 100 years, but asteroid collisions are the next 100 million years. And it's so far into the future, it's likely that another pressing issue will come, and by the time we get to that stage, the DART technology will be redundant because we've developed better technologies.
Opposition to respond?
I think that point was made somewhat before, is that the evolution of technology is a fundamentally good thing.
and the evolution of technology to create better systems than the current system we currently have, which in the future will help us protect us from asteroids, is a good thing. We mentioned a lot earlier, I can't remember why, about Jurassic Park and dinosaurs and stuff. And one of the most famous asteroid collisions in history was the one that came here and killed the dinosaurs. And if we're bringing the logo back, I don't want to go again into another asteroid collision. I think that's a pretty good set of technology.
Okay, so now questions for the opposition. Go ahead.
You've all made a very compelling argument in defense of technology in general, by which notwithstanding. But these guys have brought up, sort of with varying degrees of seriousness, they have brought up different examples of technology that could destroy the world in some way, shape, or form. And as far as I can gather, none of you is at least enough that I really was convinced. None of you has really actually addressed directly any of the things that they were bringing up, you know, enough. He's made a very compelling defense of, in particular, Tom, a very compelling defense of technology in general. But then we made technology in particular, with particular potential to destroy the world. Could you address any of the ones that they've specifically brought up?
Well, I'd say, I mean, if this house believes technology will destroy the world, we take it as a general, it's not about the particulars. In fact, we've been able to differentiate some better technologies and some worse technologies, says to me that it's dependent on the usage of technologies. I brought up the old stone as a hammerhead and, you know, as a, something to ignite flame. So that's a pretty good technology.
I think the use of how we use technology versus technology in general is exactly guns don't kill people, people kill people, and also vibrators are bad.
Okay. anyway, so this is for an abstention question. This is a general question for both sides, not a targeted one you didn't get to ask. Does anyone have an abstention question? Yes.
This is just a good obviously. So, we've obviously know that, you know, like carbon footprint, most of it's from Western countries, developed ones, and most of the pollution is actually from very wealthy people or, you know, the people that are really exploiting most of the world and even their own citizens. Does this house, well, do you sorry, believe that other countries should be allowed time to catch up in terms of human development, which obviously would be at the same, you know, same, would obviously be more carbon being used and produced. Do you believe that those countries should be allowed to do that?
That's a very weird abstention question. Proposition first, then opposition.
I think this has been a debate that's been going on for years now, and obviously because of the issues with colonialism, and we've had this historically where the countries that have been creating and manufacturing it have not been able to actually profit or actually enjoy the benefits of the technology themselves. However, we as the proposition are saying that actually it is technology that is destroying the world and giving them. It's awful, it is an awful thing, but ultimately the technology that has been used for centuries since the Industrial Revolution, it essentially has been destroying the world with, you know, pollution, with just generally, as we've been saying. So it is a difficult one, because there's the morals and there's the ethics. Is it fair that we have not given them the chance to use it? No, it's not fair. But will it benefit the world to give them that chance? I don't particularly believe so, to be honest.
Okay, opposition to respond.
Whenever you actually look at the CO2 production over time and actually compare it to our current output and their current output, you do find that it does plateau. So does population growth, so does what's called urban development, everything plateaus at a certain point. So it is really, if we allow them that time, which we should actually get to that point, it will level out eventually, regardless of, well, it'll be more of a short-term effect as opposed to a negative long-term effect, which we can rectify through better development and technology.
Okay, so looking at the time, we have time for one more round of questions. Does anyone have a question for the proposition? In the blue shirt. Yes, blue shirt. Blue t-shirt, yes.
Well, there's been a lot of argument thrown back and forth about technology being the cause of global warming on humanity overall. Can both teams agree that there's more, in general, needs to be done in educating humanity or people individually more, to be more wise with thought, more thinking more about exactly what they're doing and if they should do it, rather than what's being done.
Yep, proposition.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great point in terms of, like, legislation is so far behind in, like, keeping up with technology. If you saw Mark Zuckerberg in Congress, you had old boomers asking him why they could see what their daughter posted on Facebook rather than what the case was about. And these are the people that are putting the laws into place for the big technology companies that are investing in not just in social media, but in all avenues of technology, like hardware and everything that we hold in our hands. So yeah, I think teaching them and educating people on what they need in order to have better legislation and protection on what could potentially happen in the fallout of UNCAR development in technology.
Opposition respond?
See, the ultimate problem with that question is a lot of people who decide legislation on technology are from an older generation, so we definitely shouldn't even the way of educating them. But the thing is, whenever we get past a certain point, you're trying to educate people on things which they will not be able to grasp to understand. Like, have you ever tried teaching your granny how to use her smartphone? So it's a case of we have to find an actual solution to it where people of an age who actually understand the technology but also understand the societal impact can actually make those decisions and break down those boundaries. And we're seeing a lot of that in schools now, where we are pushing for higher IT education of varying diverse backgrounds, where it's no longer just you study ICT, you study applied ICT, you study ICT, you study computer science, software engineering, and SSE.
Perfect. So question for the opposition. Already went to you. Anyone else quickly? No? Okay, go ahead.
Fair enough. This one's more of a nitpick than anything else, but remember, Giles brought up that an example of a good AI was Cortana from Halo. Cortana, very explicitly, goes into Saiyan and tries to wipe out all life in the galaxy.
Opposition to respond?
Cortana does so whenever there's intervention from another AI system which prevents her from going redundant, which was ultimately developed by Rix in another example. So again, that was an intervention which actually caused that to happen. It was not the system itself.
I'm so proud.
Okay, proposition to respond.
Well, we've just heard his technologies causes technology to destroy the world.
Okay. Any abstaining questions? There was two last time, so yes, perfect. Go ahead, Hebe.
What is the best piece of technological advancement ever?
Okay. Proposition, you go first.
You mean that?
Opposition to respond?
The humble crockpot.
Okay, interesting. Right, now we move on to speaker ability. Now, this is not about your opinion on the debate. It's not about your personal opinion about those who are speaking. This is about which side you thought was the most clear, made most sense to you, whether they swayed you or not, who had the best arguments, okay? So, first, for the proposition, please raise your hand if you think this side debated better and spoke better tonight. Go ahead. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, and then we have a few more here. Proposition? Okay. Okay, next, if you thought the opposition spoke better tonight, raise your hand.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34, 35, 36, 37, 38, 39, 40, 41, 42, 43, 44, 45, 46, 47, 48, 49, 50, 51, 52, 53, 54, 55, 56, 57, 58, 59, 60, 61, 62, 63, 64, 65, 66, 67, 58, 59, 60, 61, 62, 63, 64, 55, 56, 57, 58, 59, 60, 61, 62, 63, 64, 55, 56, 57, 58, 59, 60, 61, 62, 63, 64, 55, 56, 57, 58, 59, 60, 61, 62, 63, 64, 55, 56, 57, 58, 59, 60, 61, 62, 63, 64, 55, 56, 57, 58, 59, 60, 61, 62, 63, 64, 55, 56, 57
I'm not internal convener tonight, so I don't have to pretend I vote Alliance. So if you are on the fence, if you can't decide, if you're shit at making decisions, raise your hand now.
Gather yourself a lot of
them. Liar. 1, 2, 3, 4. Right, keep your hand on my computer. I can't tell you just put them hand up. Mix. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9? Okay, 9. If you voted for proposition, can you put your hands up again? That's this side. Just to do a recount quickly, we're doing a recount. Get your hands up, you voted Alliance. 1, 2, 3.
This is just in Georgia.
If you honestly put your hand up for proposition, because I'm seeing people who didn't put their hands up for proposition. Okay, one. Yes, bitch! Josh, put your fucking hand up. 1, 2, 3, 4.
I'm
just kidding, it's okay. 7, 8, 9. We have 1 vote, not 2.
Yes, sir.
Right, we have the numbers. The vote is in. Jimmy, please announce. Shush!
So with 9 ayes, 44 nays, and 9 abstentions, the opposition has it.
Congratulations! I would also like to add another congratulations to the opposition for voting tonight with 3 maiden speakers. Thank you to all maiden speakers who spoke tonight. Ryan is going to lead you all down to the pub. We are in Lavery's, in the workroom. Anyone who's spoken, you can come up to the front so we can get your lovely wee photo taken. And thank you all for coming. See you next week. Thank you.